Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
solar weather. We're going to have a little look at what causes it and where it is. Basically, if there's weather, about if it's not affecting you directly, you've sort of got an interest in it. If it's causing capital damage, it's something to worry about. And of course, a solar storm which hits Earth is major news. It can actually black out a whole area, destroy whole power stations, costs thousands of dollars. And you can see if it's a solar storm happening because there's these sparks flying off the power lines. In fact, that's one of the earliest examples we know of a solar storm, that people were seeing these sparks jump off the old telegraph line. So in the back in the day when there weren't street lights around the place and everything was more, I suppose, a darker thing, and there was only one or two telegraph lines, so it was a major thing. There would be one wire going into a city and the post office at the other end. People would be aware of these things called solar storms coming through. So where are they, and how could a solar storm get up and affect you? Well, what we're going to do is talk to you more about, say, your mountaineering, for instance. So you've got the weather down in the down at the coast where you're getting ready to go on your mountaineering assault of Mount Everest, and you're aware of the weather, and you check the weather way out on Mount Everest, and it's a bit different there. And the thing is about weather's weather, there must be atmosphere. And so what is it? How does a solar storm affect us? And there's the idea that part of the solar atmosphere gets chucked out in a big way, and if that solar atmosphere charge hits Earth, we get a taste of a solar storm. That's not really quite right. What I was trying to talk about before, you've got different locations and weather at different stages, and so weather at one point is connected to the weather way up the top. So the weather on the coast is connected to the weather up out at Mount Everest, and you might say we're in the base camp, and the various tip of Mount Everest might be Jupiter, and the top of the atmosphere is up in is up past the orbit of Neptune, way out into deep space, and that's exactly what is happening. So the solar atmosphere has different layers, and the extreme layer with the solar wind, so the atmosphere of the sun is blowing out into intergalactic space, and where it reaches the sort of the edge of intergalactic space is called the heliopause. So we are actually orbiting inside the solar atmosphere. So the sun, in terms of as defined by its atmosphere, is bigger than the orbit of Neptune. It's way out there, the heliopause. That's one definition. If you define the sun as to where there is solar wind from the star, that's how big the star the sun is. And that variation of solar wind and the shock waves which occur in that solar wind cause solar weather way out here. For our satellites out in space, they're experiencing choppy solar wind conditions, and they can experience a whole build-up of massive particles suddenly slam into them in a process where you can feel a gust of wind, you can feel a gust of plasma. Now, how does it happen? Well, if you can imagine a garden sprinkler sprinkling water in a garden, those spin around sprinklers, that's pretty much what's happening with the solar wind. The actual solar wind is jetting out, and the sun, so the water goes out, but the actual sun moves around, and the water spurts out in a different direction. So we get these spirals of solar wind energy, and what happens is that there's slow water going out pretty fast, but slow from the poles and fast from the equator. And when these intersect, they cause shockwaves, a sort of a big spiraling shockwaves here. So I'm giving you a picture of the sun as big as the solar system, and we're orbiting with inside the sun. And therefore, because we're orbiting with inside the sun, we're orbiting within the weather of the sun. And that's the example of solar weather, these shockwaves. I've forgotten the actual name for these shockwaves, so it's quite interesting to look at that. And you might say, well, this is very, very thin, but it's sort of like saying that there's you're on the edge of space, there's actually no wind. We feel a lot of wind at a certain level in the troposphere. That's where there's a particular weather type of pattern that we experience as wind and weather and rain. That type of weather actually is not in the stratosphere, it's in the troposphere. So what happens is the solar wind, the stratosphere, goes right up to the thermocline, where you have a battle for heat absorption and heat dissipation between ozone and carbon dioxide. The ozone absorbs the sun's radiation and heats it up. It heats up the layer above us, so the temperature increases again. And so as the temperature increases, cold material is no longer more buoyant. It actually sits there. So we've got a roof of the weather, the stratosphere. And then it increases in temperature as you go up in the stratosphere to get those jet streams, smooth or non-turbulent air, cold air, high-speed air, the jet streams. And this is on Earth, at least. And then the radiation out into space takes over, and the temperature of the atmosphere drops to its lowest point. And then I think it's thermopause. I think so. A cline is a region with it's going at a particular gradient. It's an inclination, and a pause is a where it changes direction. So I think it's the thermopause refers to where it changes, and so above that, the temperature increases again as the sun's high energy radiation actually interacts not with ozone but with the actual individual oxygen and nitrogen that absorbs solar radiation at this wavelengths, and the temperature increases again. So the Earth is this structure, so too has the sun got a structure. And the weather we feel is at the very top layer of the sun. Working back in, that top layer is very hot, very expansive, because there's a mechanism, a mysterious mechanism. I wouldn't, if I said it was understood, I'd be able to explain it to you. But it's to do with a mechanism which accelerates ions and both ions and electrons outward from the sun. So there's a radio frequency mechanism. So we can know certain things, that a acceleration process happens, and the atmosphere, the top layer of the atmosphere, is accelerated to millions of degrees, and this creates a wind which blows outwards. It's the wind which blows the comet tails and various various things away. So this wind is seen quite visually. Say you could see a wind in a wind tunnel. You can see the wind by holding a smoking cigarette or some sort of smoking steak. You would smoke, and you could see the wind blow the tail away. And so the comets, you can actually see the solar wind blow the tail back in a particular direction. So much so that the comet swings through the sun. It's now travelling away from the sun, but its tail is in front of it. This is one of the few things that people don't understand. It's like a rock, a smoking rock, and the smoke has been blown. It's like your Barbie. You throw in some wet eucalyptus leaves and things like that to start it off. Generally, your children go around and pick up wet wood that everyone else has rejected, and they throw it in and it smokes and the wind blows it away. So that's your story of solar wind as we experience it out here on Earth. The solar weather, obviously, for Mars has blown away its atmosphere, and for a whole heap of other things. In fact, the solar weather is blowing so much that it's actually rippling our ionosphere, pretty much like wind blowing against your tent. So we have the ionosphere, which is a bit like silver foil. It's a conducting atmospheric layer, which has been ionized. And the ionization absorbs energy and increases the energy of it. But we have a layer of conduction, an invisible layer of silver foil on the outside of our planet. And we can actually hear the solar wind buffeting that silver foil. And it buffets around. And so when we can hear it, we can actually measure the clarity of the clarity of the radio echo from our ionosphere. So our ionosphere is smooth at night, and we get a beautiful echo. We can actually bounce off the spherical inside. The ionosphere forms a damn good waveguide. And so the odd people, and I do say there are odd people who have ham longwave radios, actual whole atmosphere forms a waveguide, and so and it only works at night. So these people, it might seem strange, but if it's night in very early, I suppose it would be. I just have to work out what it is. What it would be is early evening in Australia. We can speak to people first thing at night in Norway, or vice versa. I just have to remember how it goes. But it's only one way, because there's that waveguide between the ionosphere and the surface of the Earth. The radio waves bounce at these long wavelengths that you can get back. So there's the implications of the solar weather. It's all about us, and I just wanted you to link with you with the ideas of different layers. And so surely if I can look at the sun, I can see more intense solar weather, more intense things going on. And that is true. So what happens is there's the sun basically is eaten down to the temperature that you can see at the moment. So imagine you are, I don't know, you've got you're having a hot dog, sausage, your hot dog. This is the hot banger, is in the centre, the snag is in the centre. We call them snags in Australia. The snag's in the centre, it's nice and hot, and it's covered with a bun, which is thankfully at room temperature. Now forget about the sauce, forget about eating it. We're going to look at a thermal imager, and we can see the image. We can see the temperature of it. Now, if we had the bun in there, it would be at low temperature. We'd go up to 1 degree. But if we can actually remove the bun, the sausage from the bun, it would be at 10 degrees above atmosphere above, what's the atmosphere? So your room might be, you're lucky, 20 degrees. Your sausage might be at 35 degrees. You just imagine seeing it there. And that's what we're seeing. Your sun is a snag in the sky. It's got its bun ripped away. And its bun ripped away is by, it's the bun aspect is not only ripped away, it's exploded away, rocketed away. So to scale, your snags in the, say a big stadium, I've got to think of a big hall. I can't do the scale factors in my head because I'm just waltzing along here. And the bun has actually been vaporized into ultra high temperature. It's been vaporized, and really vaporized, and it's been splattered, spray painted onto the walls at such high energy. That's what's happening with our sun. We can actually see into our sun because the cloud layer of the sun has been vaporized, turned into high energy particles and blown away. So we can actually see the sun because the cloud layer, which would sit on top of the sun, has been blown away. I kid you not. So the coldest part of the sun is the place where you can, it's called the photosphere. That's, the sun is reasonably thick and you can see the top surface of its fairly high density plasma. I think it's the surface of the sun that you can see is actually several orders of magnitude less dense than our atmosphere. But above this, this radio wave, how do I heat up a gas without electrodes? That's the fundamental thing. And the obvious thing is by radio or microwaves. The sun is producing microwaves which couple from deep beneath its convection layer up above it. So there's little indication that there's a heat transport directly from the convection layer, the surface of the sun, to the upper level of the atmosphere. There's another high frequency hum which heats up the gas, and heating up the gas and blowing it away stops that radiation travelling out to space, that radiation travelling out to space. So you can actually see into the sun, and you can actually see, it's more like a sea. It is a liquid sea. You've got liquid cells, and those liquid cells are churning away, so that is like ocean currents, and that's against all the weather, and you can see islands of, how do you describe it? It's not islands of, it's islands of cold gas, but it's knots of magnetic field lines. Now, let's be clear about this. There's a, the magnetic field lines that you can see is a coupling between the field lines and the plasma. So that there should be a term for magnetic field lines coupled with plasma. So magnetic field lines and plasma form a coupled circuit, and this circuit can cool down an area. Now, how does it cool down? Well, it can prevent radiation heat going into it, and it can actually, so it can, something can be cooler by heat not going into it or heat being transported out of it. And it may well be that the sunspots effectively, not that they stop heat travelling into it, they can actually cool down more effectively. And the sunspots have intense magnetic fields, but it's an intense magnetic field lines because it's coupling with the plasma. So you've got the photosphere, which you can see. Now, there's a layer between the photosphere and, I suppose, what we call the upper atmosphere of the sun proper, which we orbit in. And that's called the chromosphere. So there's a moderate amount of gas in that, and that's hot to millions or tens of thousands of degrees, up to tens of thousands of degrees, and then the acceleration really takes off to millions of degrees and expands way up. The million degree atmosphere expands all the way up to deep space. So, giving you an idea that we're in that very top layer, the million degree layer. We can see the 5,000 degree layer, and there's a 10,000 degree layer, which is called the chromosphere. And that glows, has a reasonable moderate gas density, i.e. that gas which we say is expanded from the Sun to Neptune is now contained in a layer 1,000 kilometres thick or so, and or a few thousand kilometres thick. And that layer is mostly hydrogen gas, or gas, and it's not undergoing fusion. It's not being tightly plasma coupled with the magnetic field. It's still being influenced by magnetic field, and that's called the chromosphere. And why it's a chromosphere is that it's chromatic. It produces emission, atomic and atomic ion emission lines. And you can see it in the eclipse. It's the corona, or so the corona refers to the crown of the chromosphere, which comes out today. So the corona of the Sun is what's seen in the eclipse. So there's a sort of like an overlap of terms here. The corona is that area of the Sun immediately outside it, and it glows. It's actually emitting light. How do we know it? We put the Moon in front of it, and we can see that the Sun has got this other layer of light production. And that other layer of light production produces not the white light that we see with a black body, like a horseshoe or something which is heated up and increased in heat, but it actually produces neon or gas light. So that's like an iron layer, and it's not the ions are individual. They do shock against each other, but it's not a black body radiation. It's emission lines. So the chromosphere, or the corona, produces emission lines, and emission lines can be intensely small. So yes, you can see this area called the chromosphere, and the chromosphere has got where all this, these terms of solar tornadoes, solar tsunamis, a tsunami which rockets through the solar atmosphere. It goes around the belt of the planet. So this is where this atmosphere of the Sun, which we would recognize as atmospheric conditions here on Earth. We wouldn't recognize the space weather, but we would recognize the weather in the chromosphere as something we might imagine in our most terrifying dreams on Earth, these huge twisters, tsunamis, and other things which you can't see, like arches of energy go up into the chromosphere, these wild, wild things. So that's solar weather again. So you've got three layers of solar weather: space weather, the chromosphere weather, and the photosphere, whether it's more like current storms. So this is more gas storms which we will look at. Now, how do you observe it? Because it's like actually you're doing a model shoot against your model, and your model is, say, wearing hot pink, and they've mucked it up. They've actually backlit her with just enormous numbers of LED lights. So LED lights produce a big broad spectrum, and they're LED lights, they're solar band LED lights, so they're LED lights which look like the Sun. If you try and take a photograph, you can barely see this model in hot pink. And what's more is the model is translucent, i.e. that most of the light travels through her. You can just see it go, and you'd be really struggling to see it against that bright light. What you do is you put a hot pink filter in front of the light, and it actually takes away all the blue and the deep reds and all the other light which are mucking up your photo shoot, and you can actually quite see the model quite well. And the better, the more tightly the narrow colour the model is wearing, and the more narrow the filter is, the stronger it gets. Now, fortunately, we're talking an extreme case of this. So this is a factor of billions. You can get a billion to one rejection of the noise light, and that's what we call a Bollmann alpha. Bollmann's the visible visible hydrogen spectra, and we can actually have a notch filter to incredible accuracy, which rejects everything except the Bollmann alpha light. So we can actually just get your backyard telescope, get one of these filters, whack it on the front or whack it on your above your eyepiece, and your sun will appear. Oh, I don't think you see it any bigger, but you'll start to see your sun as you've never seen it before. Now, there's actually an old boy bloke in Sydney who has been observing the sun and recording it for 50 years or something like that. He's been digitally collecting records of the sun and observing it through these different filters. And I tried to get onto him, and he was going to phone up and speak to the kiddies about it. But that is one of the many plans which didn't go to fruition. But the this filter, you can put on your telescope, and you can see, you can filter out the photosphere, which is what you are sunbaking underneath and drying your clothes with, and see this lime and alpha lime, and which is like the glowing of the lamp. Now, I don't know if you can remember your old fish and chip shops before LEDs were everywhere, your old tube lamps, and that'd be flickering neons. The plasma will pinch and move about the place, and it's as if you have one of these filters, and you can have a filter for a neon if you really want to. You can only just see these neon lights. So in the old US pictures of old US towns that have all these neon lights flickering late at night, I think the sort of very famous pink flamingo one. And what you can do is you could get a filter which only tunes into the element which is there at that energy level, and you can black out everything except that neon light. Sorry, I'm just walking home in a bit more direct route, and there's a bit more noise associated with it. that's a important aspect. So you can see here, and now you've got the question of this atmosphere is very, very tenuous, right? And it's displaying features of a much denser atmosphere that we're used to. Now, our atmosphere, we feel about it. You breathe it in, you can actually feel the air is coupled to each other. And so if you blow, you can create a vortex. And basically, if you walk across the room, there's a vortex of air as you move across the room because of the viscosity. Now, this is very low atmosphere stuff. You expect vortexes and all this complexity stuff is not to go there, but it is actually carrying a fair amount of magnetic field through it. It's also got a lot of ions, and so if you put ions plus magnetic fields, you get coupling. And so this coupling effect is what causes a tornado. So the magnetohydrodynamics is a little bit more complex on Earth. In a tornado, you have I think it's dry underneath and hot on top, wet on top, moist air, and you have the rapid condensation. I think of the moist I have to really think. There's a tornado has a lot of energy because there's a phase transition. The moist air condenses rapidly into the dry air, heats up and rises up. And so this is why a tornado looks cloudy, because you've got condensation. It's not just dust. There's a whole heap of stuff going on, and there's a lot of energy involved in this tornado because it's a suction thing, but the suction creates something to do with some sort of phase change that goes in. Now, that sort of thing doesn't happen. Well, it might happen, but these tornadoes are... you could easily fit the Earth once or twice inside the eye of these tornadoes and cyclones ripping about the sun. So it's hard to imagine that you've got some sort of a temperature inversion and material transport, which is at the centre of all of the Earth's weather. So it looks exactly the same. There's things that we can say, oh, that's a willy-willy, which is what we call in Australia, just a wind demon. That's a localised vortex. It's not a willy-willy. Although we have a fair number of tornadoes in Australia, but they're usually, a large amount of Australia is uninhabited, so our tornado area doesn't cause a lot of damage, but you can actually, if you're way out bush, you have to actually watch out for tornadoes. And again, if you're at sea, there's these sea spouts. So I might do another podcast on the actual mechanism of tornadoes. So similarly, people say that there is a tsunami, and it's basically the plasma dynamics and magnetic fields get to act in a way that is not present on Earth. We've got a very weak magnetic field. We'll just go through again the three layers of solar weather. You've got the space weather, you've got the thing which is recognisably like Earth weather in the chromosphere, and you've got the area on the photosphere which also has weather or currents, or that is a flow of matter which has got a pattern to it. I think that would be a definition of weather. And that on the chromosphere, the photosphere, which is the stuff that you can feel heat from, is causing, is a similar in nature, but again different to water currents. And there's rising and falling associated with it. It's a lot more complex because the magnetic field means that there's energy transport. So there's energy transport from the surface of the sun way out to the space weather section where the solar wind gets generated. Or there's energy transport in a complicated way in the chromosphere. And then there's energy transport of these large confined magnetic fields being knotted up in the photosphere. So the photosphere is where you can actually see knots of magnetic field, which are, well, they're cooler, and they have to be cooler for two reasons. One is that they're radiating their energy more. Now, they're obviously not radiating their energy more in the visible. They could be radiating their energy more through a magnetic mechanism or another high energy mechanism. The energy has been transported out of it. And it has to be a mechanism because the standalone bulk statistic mechanism of black body radiation is what the photosphere is using. So it's actually the temperature of the material in there is cooler, because it's, you know, the actual temperature of a sunspot may be several hundred, or I don't know, even 1,000 degrees cooler it appears back. And so to be cooler, it can't take the same energy transport in, or it's got a greater energy transport out. And and the magnetic field lines can be so intense that the actual energy transport may be frustrated by the intense magnetic field lines, or they may not be, but the intense magnetic field lines may be actually radiating energy out of your sunspot more, but not visible energy, but magnetic energy, which is used further up in there. And so there's a lot of smoking guns around the place, a lot of research going on, a lot of disagreement. Now, what's going on is that there's one thing that people hate, and they hate, well, I don't know, people hate this type of thing. They hate scientists really not knowing what they know, and they hate disagreement, or they like a disagreement to be a show, whereas if the disagreement is a boring disagreement of well, what colour should we paint the hall? Oh, I think we should paint it brown. Oh, I think we should paint it off-white. What should we do? Oh, I don't care. That's really the level that it is at, and that's really not good news. If people are shouting at each other and, oh, I stake my reputation on it being white, or I stake my reputation on you painting it chocolate brown, that's great news, but it's actually not a great social story to say. So unfortunately, in the solar physics community, there's people are rather calm. There's no great stakes. It's not, as we'd say, we're not betting sheep stations. So there's this terminology again out here in Australia that I suppose to chill out about an issue, we're not betting sheep stations here. We haven't reached a stage where we're bargaining sheep stations on it. But the end of the result is, unfortunately, the actual communication that we need to do about this interesting solar weather doesn't get set through. Now, I'm just going to conclude it here and walk the last little bit home. You've heard me get a bit breathless. I really have to improve my fitness over the top of that to get out of it, and hopefully parts of my brain are getting back into gear so I can just speak and do a podcast. I don't know how this will come out. And I suppose the general thing I do know that in a week or so's time, I'll be able to improve my podcasting even more and actually get back on top. Secret weapon to move ahead in my own auto self-rehabilitation. Thanks for listening.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.